Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome into the downtown studios of KMOX for a Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Jen Cease, obviously not Matt Pauly. Kyle Sixta is alongside in the controls. Matt is homesick today. I think Joe Pott was in for him last night, and Matt is still not feeling very well. So Matt Pauly, get well soon. He's got a couple of kids in the house, and I don't know if this is his story, but my typical story of having four kids, they range from age 8 to 18, is they are lovely little petri dishes that often like to bring lots of fun stuff home for us to get sick with. And of course, in the winter months and when you're stuck in the home on days like this, even if you go out and play in the snow, a lot of that stuff just kind of passes around. So get well soon, Matt Pauly. We'll hold down the fort for you here until you can come back. Like I mentioned, Joe Pott was in last night for Matt Pauly. He was out, so people have been filling in for him. He did a nice recap of the happenings in the NFL, and boy, just what a difference 24 hours makes from when Joe Pott talked last night. With the NFL regular season wrapping up, many teams are officially kicking off their offseason and making moves. Yesterday, the Jacksonville Jaguars fired head coach Doug Peterson, but retained GM Trent Baalke. This afternoon, Las Vegas Raiders released head coach Antonio Pierce. And then I saw some just recent news in the last couple of hours, I think it was, that today former quarterback Tom Brady, who's a minority owner in the club, will assist in the head coach search. So that'd be interesting, getting quarterback's perspective in searching for the next head coach for the Raiders. And we know from the end of November that the Chicago Bears fired Matt Eberflus, got a bit of a head start on finding a new head coach. They have reached out to the Dallas Cowboys for permission to interview Mike McCarthy, along with several other teams, of course, as well. All teams are interviewing more than one coach. But so far, no response from the Dallas Cowboys for the Chicago Bears. And one of the last things I could find today, anyway, was the Minnesota Vikings. They've signed Daniel Jones to their active roster ahead of the 2025 playoffs. Quarterback Jones is coming from the New York Giants. So a little bit of football coverage for you. Different football than the one I normally cover, which is world football, that is soccer. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the second hour. But first, just an update quickly on some other sports you might want to take a look at tonight on the college basketball scene. UIC at Missouri State tonight at 7 p.m., so less than an hour from now. SIUE at Eastern Illinois at 7:30 p.m., and LSU at Mizzou at 8 p.m. Show rundown for today, a lot to cover. First, we'll be joined by Scott Miller. He's a New York Times contributor. He has written the book 90% Mental. I'm a huge fan of the mental game when I talk sports, so interested to get his thoughts on that, along with his new book coming in May of 2025, Skipper, Why Baseball Managers Matter and Always Will. We'll talk to him at 6:20. At around 6:35, the bottom of this hour, I'll visit with my friend Kevin Ryans. I often get to see him on City's soccer training pitch, but he's a St. Louis sports broadcaster. He covers all the things for Fox 2 and St. Louis 11. We'll talk with him a little bit about what's going on around St. Louis. And at the end of this hour, we will replay Tom Ackerman's conversation with SLU men's basketball head coach Josh Schertz from this past Sports on a Sunday morning. Great conversation that they had, and we'll cover that all in the first hour. That's a lot to get to. Let's take a break, and we'll get to it first with Scott Miller. Stay right here for more on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Welcome back on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Jen Cease here filling in for Matt Pauly, who we hope gets well soon from the winter sick bugs that are running around his house as well as mine. Joining us now is Scott Miller, New York Times contributor, author of 90% Mental, and he's got a new book coming in May called Skipper, Why Baseball Managers Matter and Always Will. You can pre-order, by the way. Thanks, Scott, for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, Jen. Thanks for welcoming me in with the raucous rock and roll tune, Panama. Van Halen.
Yeah, that's right. Then you're from my time. Then I remember many rocking to Panama for sure. You know, it seems so crazy to think that because it's so cold here in St. Louis, we've had major winter storms coming through. It was tough to get into the station tonight. That in just less than 3 months, basically from Major League Baseball's 2025 season opening day. I want to definitely get to your books. I want to actually ask you about both of them. I'm interested in the mental game. But Major League Baseball moves from a national perspective. There's, you know, some teams are quieter, some teams are busier. When it comes to the Cardinals, it's a little bit quiet, a lot of rumor about Nolan Arenado. Curious as to your overall perspective on him potentially waiving some no trade clause on potentially going to the Red Sox. I heard maybe also the Astros. What do you think that might mean? Is that a possibility?
You know, I think it is a possibility because, you know, Arenado he's going to turn 34 this season. And, you know, he and Paul Goldschmidt were kind of a similar situation, right? They're getting older. They were together. They were the part of the core of the Cardinals. And it just didn't work out. And so clearly, you know, the Cardinals didn't win as they thought they would with those two as centerpieces. And obviously Goldschmidt's already gone. It just makes too much sense to not trade Arenado. I think I mentioned he's going to be 34. From his perspective, you know, he's going to want to play for a winner. From the Cardinals' perspective, they're retooling, obviously. You know, and they're not, you know, who knows how the year will go. But, you know, obviously, as you said, it's been very, very, very quiet. And to me, that just also indicates that their big move will be a blockbuster deal with Arenado because, you know, it's just been crickets so far. I know, you know, teams that have yet to spend any money in free agency this winter, and the Cardinals are one of those six.
Yeah, and you think about it would be remiss if I didn't ask about one of our, you know, the rival for St. Louis, which is the Chicago Cubs, acquiring Kyle Tucker, the Brewers losing Adams, the Reds making a few moves. You know, is it too quiet for the Cardinals, or is it from hearing from John Mozeliak, who talked on Sunday with our sports director, Tom Ackerman, kept reiterating the fact that we have time. So it's on the Cardinals side of the fence, it seems like there's, you know, no red flags just yet, but a lot of other teams are really busy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. There's still a lot of other teams, you know, figuring things out, and there's still a handful of free agents out there. So, yeah, some teams are starting team building later than others this year. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to say it like that because, look, it's not like John Mozeliak is just starting for next year's team. I mean, obviously, he and his team have been working on this all winter long, but I should say it's slower for some teams than others. The teams that aren't looking to make the big splash in the free agent market, you know, there's still pieces out there. You know, there's a bunch of relievers still on the market. You know, I mean, not that the Cardinals are going to sign Pete Alonso, but there's like a marquee names as big as Alonso on down the list. So, you know, there's no doubt that there's time still, even though, as you mentioned, you know, the season is starting to bear down on us.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to move to your books. Specifically, first of all, the first one, when I, you know, looked a little bit more about your profile and looked at, I do some youth training in the mental game. When I was an athlete, where I struggled myself wasn't in the physical side of the game. It was always in the mental part of the game, and love the fact that you wrote a book about that being 90% mental, a co-author in that book. It just doesn't seem like, whether you're in a professional sport or you're all down to the youth level, that we can bang home the importance of the mental game enough on any level of any sport.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Jen. And, you know, it was a pleasure writing that book with Bob Tewksbury, the former Cardinal, the former All-Star pitcher Cardinal. you know, after his playing career ended, he went into he was a mental skills coach for the Boston Red Sox for 12 years. And then for San Francisco for two more and Chicago Cubs for two more. And right now, I don't want to say he's retired. He's not working for a team, but, you know, he's still very active in the mental skills and, you know, working with you know, private clients, that kind of thing. And it is. It's huge. You know, I always say, you know, I mean, just take Major League Baseball. You know, there are a handful of players like Shohei Ohtani, you know, Juan Soto, the top tier guys. There are a handful of those guys where, okay, their talent is higher, a higher level than others. But I'm going to say 90% of the Major League players, the talent level is pretty equal or pretty close to it. That's how they got to the majors, and not everybody can be Shohei Ohtani. So for those other, whatever, 90% or whatever the number is of Major League players who are very, very gifted but not Shohei Ohtani, that's where the mental skill separates you, you know? I mean, you know, I can have just as much talent as you, Jen, but if your mental game is sharper and you're tougher mentally and you figure things out mentally than I have, then you're probably going to end up being a better player and rising to a higher level in Major League Baseball than I am. And it's so important. And, you know, that was the first book I did. And, you know, Tukes, I ended up covering him at the end of his career. I was covering in Minnesota, covering the Twins. That's where the relationship came about. And I always really enjoyed him because he was smart, good sense of humor. I liked to laugh. And he was just terrific. And anyway, I knew him back then, and many, many, many years passed. And then, you know, we reconnected, you know, when he was Red Sox mental skills coach. And anyway, he ended up emailing one day, you know, are you interested in writing a book? And I'd always kind of thought about writing a book, but I hadn't yet. And I know how much time it takes. And I always figure, well, if that's ever going to happen, it's got to be a subject I'm interested in. Cause you know, it takes two and a half years. You better enjoy the subject if you're going to do it. And not to mention how much I enjoyed Tukes, and it was very valuable. I mean, I learned a lot of things, and what I love about the book is there's a lot of baseball stories in there. And a lot of his career, a lot of Cardinal stuff. But beyond that, we've had all kinds of reaction. People that golf have come up to Tukes and say, hey, your book has helped my golf game immensely. And we've had other sports, athletes in other sports say that. And also, especially at the college and high school level, we've had a ton of coaches and kids come up and say that, yeah, hey, this might be a baseball book, but these mental skills, they carry across all the other sports, and they carry it on in life. You know, they're life skills.
Well, you must have gotten the bug because you've written a new book that what I mentioned in the intro, Skipper, Why Baseball Managers Matters and Always Will. You can pre-order now. Is this a solo book? Is this something, how'd this come about? And it sounds really, really interesting. Why should people start to pre-order?
Thank you for the nice things and you said. And, you know, it came about. Because it's funny, 90% mental was enjoyable, and we did well with it, and the publisher liked it, and they were happy. And then, so my literary agent and I talked for a couple years after that. You know, I learned the phrase, what's the next project? That phrase, the next project. In the book world, I can understand that, because my literary agent threw out a couple ideas at me. What would you think about this or that? I'm like, I'm not that interested, or I think that, I don't know if I could do it the way I'd want to do it. I threw a couple subjects at him, and he was like, I don't know if that's going to, if, you know, publisher's going to be interested. And we probably talked a couple years before we hit on the subject. And I think I settled on this subject, again, as I said, something you have to be interested in. And you know, I've had the great good fortune to cover baseball for 30 years or so. And, you know, for many years when I was national writer at CBSSports.com and Bleacher Report, you know, in spring training, I'd end up in Florida, Arizona. I'd be at all 30 camps. And, you know, so over all that time, you know, it was really beneficial. I loved meeting people, talking to people, whether it's, you know, John Mozeliak, Theo Epstein, Andrew Friedman down in Tampa Bay before he became the big shot with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I remember talking to him on the backfields at length. And anyway, when it came time to come up with a subject for the book, after we had, you know, bandied about a number of things, you know, managing the analytics and how much power does a manager have today? That's a fascinating topic, and it's fascinated me because I've seen it change. You know, I mentioned I covered the Minnesota Twins. That was back when Tom Kelly was managing in the 90s, and he was one of those old school authoritarians where, you know, he's the way what he said went, nobody dared interfere with him. He was the guy.
And yeah, there was no back and forth, was there?
No. And you flash forward to today, and obviously the game's changed so much after Moneyball that analytics, you know, baseball front offices, you know, they get involved in the manager's office now. And so anyway, to answer your last question on, you know, why should people pre-order? Why should they be interested? Well, first off, if anybody is, I really appreciate it. And what I would say is, basically, this is kind of a wide-ranging sweep of about 50 years, starting in the late 70s, with those authoritarian managers carrying through to today. And the gist of it is, what was the job of manager like then for Earl Weaver and Tony La Russa and Sparky Anderson? And what's it like today for Ollie Marmol, you know, Dave Roberts, who just won the World Series, Aaron Boone? What are the differences? What was it then? What's the job now? And how did we get from then to now? And why did we get from then to now? So it carries over that time. And, you know, we go through the Moneyball period in baseball and how controversial that was when the book came out in 03. And you had the war between, and it was a war between the front offices that were trying to take more control of the on-field stuff and the managers who didn't want to give it up and didn't understand why all of a sudden they didn't have as much authority anymore. So, we go from then to now and through the Moneyball thing, and I had a great time with it. I hope people like it, and I can't thank enough. I probably interviewed 200 people or so for this book, and so much cooperation. I'm so fortunate that, you know, from current managers, you know, Dusty Baker to, you know, Terry Francona to Dave Roberts to executives like, you know, Theo Epstein and Billy Beane, he and I revisited some of that Moneyball time period in baseball, and Sandy Alderson and, you know, executives, players, managers, what, you know, all of it. So, I'm excited. It comes out May 13th. And, like I say, fingers crossed people like it, Jen.
Thanks for joining us, Scott. Best wishes on the book release, and we'll be looking forward to hearing about it.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year. That was Scott Miller, author, coming book, Skipper, Why Baseball Managers Matter and Always Will. It's packed with baseball history, interviews with dozens of MLB's current stars and veterans, as Scott talked about, and an exclusive inside look at the day-to-day life of a manager competing for the World Series. More to come. We're going to visit with our own St. Louis's Kevin Ryans of Fox 2 and News 11. Sports broadcaster. He'll be up next on KMOX. And we roll on a Graybar Sports Open line here on KMOX. Jen C's in for Matt Pauly. Joining me now is Kevin Ryans, my friend and St. Louis sports broadcaster for Fox 2 and St. Louis 11. Now, I personally generally see Kevin on St. Louis City's at the stadium for games when he's covering that alongside me or at the training pitch. But we're here to talk about all sports, Kevin. Thanks for joining me.
Jen, you know, the best parts of the days when I go to St. Louis City is hanging out with all the other media members, including yourself. And so I'm so happy that I have been invited to be able to talk to you tonight. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Preferably on not overly cold days like today or overly hot days like in August, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely like a little bit more in the middle, like the spring or the fall.
100%.
Can't have it too hot. Can't have it too cold like it is right now, but You know, we grind. You know, we keep going.
Call me Goldilocks. I like it just right. So I updated everybody on what I could find on the NFL. So unless anything's changed in the last 20 minutes, we kind of got that up to date. And of course, the Major League Baseball with the Cardinals, the rumors floating around Nolan Arenado. Talked a little bit about that. My producer, Kyle Sixta, was kind enough to find a little bit of news in like the last, 10 or 20 minutes that the Giants have signed future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander to a one-year deal. He's going to spend his 20th season in San Francisco. I don't know if I surprised you with that. He surprised me with that. Any reaction?
Justin Verlander still has it. To what degree, skills obviously diminish as the years go on and you keep pitching. But as we've seen with a lot of Major League Baseball pitchers over the years, a pitcher might be the best position to be able to have any type of longevity as long as you're healthy. And Justin Verlander, for the most part, has been healthy in his career. He'll add something to San Francisco. I just don't know how good they're going to be. But, at the very least, you're going to get a quality starting pitcher. And I think, he still has a lot of gas left in him. Him and Scherzer, those guys are just incredible wizards. They're awesome the way that they're able to perform and pitch at such high degree of difficulty for such a long period of time. And so Justin Verlander, all the best to him as he goes on. That's awesome.
And of course, things a little bit quieter, as we talked about with Scott Miller in the previous segment on the St. Louis Cardinals, with rumors floating around about Nolan Arenado and other teams being busy with moves. John Mozeliak was on Sunday with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday Morning. And, Kevin, he just kind of said, keeping the worries low, saying, hey, there's plenty of time. We can work to get him to be to a place that he wants to be. There's plenty of time to make moves. They're interested in making sure they reduce payroll, but staying competitive. Just wanted to get your overall thoughts on Arenado and, of course, the future of Cardinals, because we're looking at, an opening season that's less than 3 months away, although Mozeliak says we have plenty of time.
Yeah, most of these rosters aren't fully rounded out yet. We're still in January. They still have all January and then February into spring training, and then you have the month in between that and then the regular season. So, yeah, they still have time. But I think the Cardinals have told fans what they're going to do, reducing payroll. And they're going to try to focus in on the young players they have at the major league level while developing the players that they have over in the minor league level. And even, back over in the winter meetings, they were talking about how they want to really see these players take an elevated role. And when you commit to something like that, the product may not be as good. I'm not going to say that they're going to be bad. I've seen plenty of young teams do very well over at the major leagues and surprise Major League Baseball with a good season and potentially the postseason. But I think you got to temper your expectations if you're the St. Louis Cardinals and the fan, or they should say the St. Louis Cardinals fans, because you just don't know what you're going to get if they're really going to kind of hone in on this kind of retool, this kind of development phase that they have going on here. And as for Arenado, I love watching Nolan Arenado selfishly play third base and hit home runs over at Busch Stadium. And so I, of course, would love for him to stay and be able to watch him on most days throughout the regular season. But is this where he wants to be at this point in his career? You know, quite sure if the Cardinals are going to be competing for a world championship. Oh, Nolan Arenado is on the tail end of his career, right? He's still somewhat in his prime, on the tail end of that prime. Does he want to have that year here to be able to go and be on a development team, kind of help a team kind of string along? Or does he want to go play for a contender, try to make a postseason and try to win a world championship? That's something that's missing on his resume. So, it's one of those deals where the Cardinals and Nolan Arenado have to figure this out, whether they want to continue to be with each other. Do we know if this marriage is going to stay along for a whole season? I've been very skeptical going into the offseason when Mozeliak is saying that that Arenado is open for, he's opened the trading block for him to be able to go move somewhere, but you just don't know. And so the whole up in the air deal, I think he starts the season on the team. It doesn't seem like they found a suitor. That's good for him. I know that there's been rumblings about him and maybe he liked Boston, yeah, and he didn't like Houston and all that stuff. But, who knows what's going to happen with that saga. Selfishly, though, I love watching Nolan Arenado play third base. He's an MVP-level third baseman, and then he obviously can still hit the ball pretty well. So, selfishly, would love to see him here in St. Louis.
All right, and last but not least with you, Kevin, I've got to cover the NHL in about 20 minutes, maybe a little less. The Central Division number 5 St. Louis Blues dropped the puck tonight against the number 2 team in the Central Division, Minnesota Wild. So 7 p.m., like 18 minutes away or so. They're halfway through the season on an upward trajectory from the front office, it seems, to the ice. Kevin Wheeler talked in his sports reports a little bit earlier, an hour before, about the fact that the Blues have won 4 of their last 6, several with 4 or more goals. So offense is clicking, but they're coming off a loss. Kevin, what are the chances for an away win against the number 4 team in the league?
Yeah, they're going to have to play some good hockey tonight because the Minnesota Wild are an excellent team, and they're not a team that they should be messed with. I believe they played earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken. So they were familiar a little bit with them. And, of course, they're Central Division rivals, so that's a team that they're going to face a bunch this year. Hey, look. The Blues are playing much better hockey over the last month. They're extremely improved under Jim Montgomery, and that is no slight towards Drew Bannister, who I thought did a terrific job getting the Blues kind of back on track last year after such a rough start to the season. They had a little bit of a streak where they didn't win a lot of games. I think that affected their whether or not they made the postseason last year. But they were darn close to making it. And then to start this season, it wasn't working. You can tell it wasn't working. This is a guy who was a first-time NHL coach. You have a guy like Jim Montgomery who had the Boston Bruins, even though they kind of fell flat in the postseason, had the Boston Bruins with the best record ever in the National Hockey League. He was one of the best coaches in there. You have a caliber coach in the free agent market. You go and grab him. And they have done that, and they have turned a big corner. I know they had a little bit of a stumble there in December, but I think they found it again, and hopefully that, once they kind of get everything all together, I still think they're trying to work out the kinks within that team. But once they start playing at what their peak potential is, I'm not going to say that they're going to be one of those teams that is contending for a Stanley Cup. I think that's a little bit too much. But I do think that they can absolutely compete for one of the spots in the postseason. And you can see it right now. They're playing so much better hockey. They're beating quality teams. They're playing really well, playing together. Everything is kind of meshing well, and people are learning their roles. And when you have that, a team that's starting to come together with some good goaltending play, Jordan Binnington, a couple of shutouts over the last couple of weeks. Joel Hofer has done a nice job over at net. You never know what can happen.
All right, that was Kevin Ryan, St. Louis sports broadcaster for Fox 2 and St. Louis 11. Kevin, I'll see you on a pitch somewhere soon, hopefully not too cold.
Jen, I hope it's going to be cold in February. Hopefully by the time we get to March and April,
100%.
It's a little bit better.
All right, thanks, Kevin. So, have a good one.
All the best. Jen, all the best to you.
More to come. We're going to replay Tom Ackerman's conversation with SLU men's basketball head coach Josh Schertz coming up next. Stay with us on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Nope, not yet. Jen C's filling in for Matt Pauly, who's out not feeling very well. We hope he's comes back soon. Right now, though, we want to take you to a replay. Every Sunday, Tom Ackerman visits with various guests on Sports on a Sunday Morning. A regular contributor is SLU men's basketball head coach Josh Schertz, who talked with Tom about how the season's going and what their outlook is.
Let's take a listen to this.
Whoa, 12 on the shot clock. Back to Robbie. Bang, you got another one. Oh, Robbie Avila.
The movement, Rammer, the movement.
Five players touched it.
Five-man basketball, Rammer.
Timeout, St. Joe's.
Get on your feet.
Timeout, St. Joe's. This is the crowd.
Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. with the call. Inject that call into my veins. I love that stuff. This is our Billiken Report. It's sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. The head coach of the Billikens is Josh Schertz. I heard them play that for you on the postgame show after your win over St. Joseph's. What a fun call. What a fun moment that was for the Billikens.
Yeah, great possession. Even better call. There's a lot of cool things about St. Louis basketball. I don't know if there's anything cooler than having Rammer and Earl calling the games, and just how knowledgeable they are, how passionate they are, and reason both guys are Hall of Famers. They're just incredible to deal with, and like I said, their passion, their knowledge is incredible.
There is no doubt. I mean, I've learned so much from Bob Ramsey through the years, listening to him call games here on KMOX and beyond. And Earl Austin Jr. is also, as you mentioned, a Hall of Famer, a Missouri Sports Hall of Famer. He's in every gym. He's been in every gym in this city times 100. And he knows basketball inside and out. And to hear his enthusiasm about your play right there and your offense, that's just a little bit of what we're going to see down the road, I think. You are starting to click there. That is Indiana State 2023-24 basketball right there, and you've carried it into St. Louis.
Yeah, we're starting to. I think, you know, look, anybody who, you know, really enjoys basketball, I think whether you're a fan or media, they appreciate guys playing exceptionally hard and guys playing together on both ends of the floor. And when you're playing as hard as you can and guys are leaving it out there and guys are doing it as a team, you know, that excites anybody who loves basketball and loves sports. So, you know, that was cool to see. But we're making progress. I think, you know, we're understanding on both ends of the floor, you know, the level of togetherness needed, how we want to play, our identity, what it needs to be, you know, not just offensively, but defensively. And so, you know, sometimes those things, I think I said it a while back, you know, sometimes it happens early. Sometimes it, you know, it happens, you know, later on in the year, middle of the year. And sometimes, you know, it never happens for teams. So, you know, we're turning it on in terms of, you know, understanding who we are, our function, how we want to play on both ends. Now we just got to keep going to work and getting better because, this league gives you no respite. So it's, you know, you just got to get ready for the next one, and we got to stay humble and, you know, and continue to improve on a daily basis, but certainly a lot of progress here the last couple weeks.
Nothing creates energy like good defense, and there's no doubt about it that you have been playing that a lot better. When your style, when your team is playing its very best defensively, what does that look like? What do you preach to your team? What do you want to see?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because we always, even in Indiana State, you know, everybody talked about our offense, but, you know, we were the number one defense in the Missouri Valley last year. And the year before, we were number two going in the final two games and wound up finishing fourth. You know, and going back to my time at LMU, it's impossible to be good offensively if you're bad defensively, I think. Because your ability to turn people over, your ability to get stops and run and get cross matches, and everything's predicated on your ability to do it on the defensive end at a high level. So I'll start with that. But defense, to me, when you're looking at it, it's we talk a lot about invisible plays, right? Like so much of defense is subtlety and nuance that, you know, fans and media, you know, aren't going to give a whole lot of attention to, but it's what drives winning and what drives great defense. So, you know, playing with unbelievable, you know, energy, the effort and physicality required, and how connected you are. Defense is about flying around, covering for each other, communicating at a high level. You know, it's all those things put together, but a lot of it goes unnoticed because no one's going to be like, man, you know, your ball pressure was unbelievable tonight. That really drove the game. Or your ability to cancel a ball screen or getting back below the ball in transition and into your shrink spots and loading the ball and keeping them out of transition or rotation box out. So I could go over 100 things that probably for most fans escape and they don't get any box score validation. But all those things are the invisible plays that drive winning. And, you know, and to do that, you got to have guys that are committed to winning and guys that are committed to team success. And that's got to be super important because you're not going to get that love from, you know, outside. It's all internal in terms of what it does to drive winning.
You know, I was reading about your game and I watched, I was at the Herman Trophy banquet. So I actually heard that call that I just played earlier live on my drive home. I'm like, oh baby, I got to turn on ESPN2. I want to see this for myself. Crowd looked good. Uniforms look good. You know, the basketball looks good and all that stuff. But you know, you look at the big picture of this thing and you see that you have starters that are grinding it out. They are working. And, you know, I know a lot of people, I was reading about the St. Joseph's game and some people were pointing to the bench minutes and the depth. Mm-hmm. I remember your teams at Indiana State not going much deeper than 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. You found the right combination right now. And also you've dealt with some health issues on your team. Have you found what you like right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, it's funny, you know, everybody worries about, I think that's one of the more overrated things is, you know, is how much, you know, how many minutes guys are playing. I mean, there's a lot of different variances. Of course, on a team You know, my job is to win the game in front of me. You know, I'm not thinking about, you know, 10 games from now or you know, what's going to happen a year from now or 2 years from now or whatever. Like, you know, I get paid to win the game in front of me and do what I think is best to help drive winning for that team. And so, you know, I'd love to have, you know, I do think our starting five has kind of formed itself, and those guys are playing at a high level right now. You know, they're each kind of understanding their function, and they're each bringing and adding value to winning and impacting winning in significant ways. We got to have, and I'd like to have better bench performance. Last year, we played six guys mainly, Bledson being the sixth, and he was sixth man of the year in the league. And our benches, you know, a lot of it has just been, you know, Kellen, who was a starter and one of our best players first four games. You know, we obviously starting on November 25th. Really has had very limited game practice time because of the cramping, then the hip flexor. So much like, you know, people think, okay, he's back, he's going to be back to himself. Well, you know, he's not. And it does take a while. It's just like it's taken Robbie a while to come back from, you know, from a couple months out. And Robbie's just now, to me, looking like, you know, what he was last year and a better version of that. You know, I think we got to find it with some of these young guys. You know, Max Bakar, Amari McCautry, you know, Killian Brokoff, you know, Dylan Warlick, these young guys. We have to get some of them stepping up and playing well enough to be able to absorb minutes. Because when you go into a game like we did against St. Joe's, you know, our bench, they didn't play many minutes, which is true. I think they played, you know, maybe 20 minutes combined, but they were also a combined minus 26. So, you know, you got to, you know, if you come in as a bench guy, you don't have to move the needle, but the needle has to at least stay neutral. And you got to defend, and you got to rebound, you got to take care of the ball. And then the rest of it comes when you do those things. And, you know, we got some young guys that are figuring it out, the level, the physicality. But certainly we're not going to just rest guys to rest guys. And it's my job to make sure if we have to, that those guys are in condition to play, you know, 40 minutes and the output of, you know, Isaiah and Gibson and Kobe and Kalu and Robbie in terms of what they're doing really on both ends of the floor for a lot of those guys is remarkable. But certainly it's also my job to try to develop some bench depth, and I've got to do that. And hopefully Kellen, as he, you know, gets back and kind of gets his legs under him and we address this cramping deal. I think the hip flexor, he looks okay. It's just he's rusty out of rhythm, but Kellen certainly would be a guy that's capable of playing major minutes for us, whether that's as a starter off the bench.
One more thing before we go, because we have a weather update coming here at 10:45. It has been, as you know, a very stormy day here in St. Louis. But two things coming. One, Monday night, your first coach's show at Humphreys. That's going to be a blast with you and Bob Ramsey. And then secondly, a huge game on Wednesday against St. Bonaventure. Just huge. I mean, your schedule has been challenging to start here, going back and forth. Now you get a monster game against a team that is, so far, the cream of the crop in the A-10.
Yeah, looking forward to the coaches' show with Rammer. Should be a lot of fun, and hopefully get to see a bunch of Billikens out there and fans out there, and certainly tuned in. And then, yeah, St. Bonaventure, 14-1. I think they've won 8 or 9 in a row at the moment. Big home win over VCU, went to Fordham, took care of business. This league is a monster. You can't pick your head up at all. You just put your head down, you prepare as well as you can, you go out, and then you try to compete and attack it and stack possession by possession, and then learn from it, grow from it, and then get ready for your next one. Anytime you pick your head up and look around, you're going to get beat. We have a monster one, like you said, on Wednesday, and then it gets no easier. We fly out and we play, you know, VCU, who's one of the best teams in the country, and at Richmond, who's also undefeated in the league. So it's one after another. We just got to keep our heads down, keep working, keep getting better, and then attack these challenges and do it as a team.
I'm just getting word that the coach's show has been canceled, and that's probably a smart move because of the weather. I just got word from your staff on that. So the coach's show canceled, but that game certainly not. It's going to be a big one on Wednesday when SLU takes on St. Bonaventure. Pack that place at Chaffetz Arena, folks. There's nothing like a great college basketball atmosphere, and you could feel it coming out of the radio, coming out of the television, that St. Louis is the place to be. So congratulations on the 2 A-10 wins flying out of the gate against Fordham and St. Joseph's. Good luck against St. Bonaventure. We appreciate you joining us on KMOX very much.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. We'll talk soon. Take care, everybody. Be safe out there.
Well, Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Moving along into our second hour of the program on a KMOX Graybar Sports Open Line. Welcome back in. I'm Jen Cees in for Matt Pauley, who's not feeling well tonight. Get well soon. We had a busy first hour in Matt's absence. We talked Major League Baseball with Scott Miller, New York Times contributor and author of the 90% Mental book and a new book he's got coming out called Skipper, Why Baseball Managers Matter and Always Will. That comes out in May. Pre-order is happening right now. We talked NFL, Cardinals, Blues with Kevin Ryan, St. Louis sports broadcaster for Fox 2 and St. Louis 11. And we heard a replay of Tom Ackerman's Sunday conversation with Josh Ertz, head coach of SLU men's basketball. In the later part of this hour, we're going to shift over to soccer. That's my jam. I'm going to shift over and talk a little bit about St. Louis City and the recent MAC Award, Herman Trophy Awards that happened just this past Friday night. We'll talk with Dale Schilly and Bill McDermott about those things. But first, we're going to start with Alvin Reed, St. Louis American writer, who had an article yesterday that I found in a search, and I found it really interesting. 25 sports things I'd like to see in 2025. Alvin, thanks for joining us. That was quite a roundup of St. Louis names in St. Louis sports of what you want to see this year.
Hey, absolutely. And I thank you for the chance to be on tonight. Yeah, I kind of do that at the end of each year. And man, a lot happened in 2024, but there is a lot I'd like to see in 2025. Some I know probably won't happen, but hey, we can wish, can't we?
Hey, well, you called it the Reed Roundup, and I really like to see that. So, of course, one of the first things that you take notice of as a St. Louis fan, if you're a fan of football, you have many teams around, but of course, a lot of people like the Kansas City Chiefs. You're looking for them to win an unprecedented third consecutive Super Bowl led by Patrick Mahomes and Coach Andy Reed. You feeling good about that?
I am, and being a lifelong Dallas Cowboy fan since I was 7 and I'm now 64, they aren't really my team, but they are my wife's team. She adopted them like
well played, sir. Well played.
Like a third child. So I, kind of like, oh my gosh, But no, it really would be historic, and I would really like to see it in that, they won two, and what they've done really over the last 7 years in a lot of ways is unprecedented, maybe with the exception of the New England Patriots, of course. And I would just like to see somebody do it three times in a row to be able to say we were the first and we were the only to win three Super Bowl titles. And the fact that it is Kansas City right across the state, and I'm familiar with that part of the state because I'm sure a lot of your listeners may know this. I'm a tried and true Kansas Jayhawk. Never lived over there, but just went to school over there. So I have an affinity for Kansas City, so I'd like to see it happen the third time.
You know, I'm really reading your article. I really like how it lays out all the names. There's St. Louis names that are bolded and kind of, really makes you take notice if you don't already know of all the names that are out there doing great things, whether they're here in St. Louis or elsewhere. Another one that you talked about was Boston Celtics star Jason Tatum to win the 2025 NBA Most Valuable Player Award.
Yes, and right now, when you get about halfway through the season, it's anybody's game, but it's kind of what happens between now and the end of the season. I think he could still win the MVP award. And, Boston winning a second NBA title, just wonderful. It was great to see him finally get that first one. But, hey, kind of like the Chiefs, back it up with a second one. And then you're emphatically have put your name out there, you'll forever be remembered. Not that he would be forgotten, but it would be great to win that MVP and also back it up with a championship.
You know, and as a woman who's played, and a girl who played sports, and we didn't have a lot of those things to look up to and to look at the growth of the women's side of the game, it made me happy to read that line that you had that says a Jason Tatum-led group to secure a WNBA franchise for St. Louis. I mean, that would be incredible, called the St. Louis Spirit. He's got my vote just for that.
Hey, those of us all remember the St. Louis Spirits and the joy and the love we had for that ABA franchise that could have merged into the NBA, but the owners decided to take the kind of buyout, and they got paid for like 30, 40 years off that and made a whole lot of money. But at the same time, I still hold dear to my heart the St. Louis Spirits. And if we got that WNBA franchise, it would be great to just call it the Spirit. But I think it could be done. We mentioned Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs, and he and his wife are players in trying to bring a franchise to Kansas City, and I don't know if Missouri would have two WNBA franchises, but obviously Jason's got the in with the NBA, and I think that gives us a little bit of leverage over Kansas City, so I'd like to see that happen too.
Who wouldn't? I appreciate also your call out to the fact that, you know, as much as Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, you can't go anywhere and talk about WNBA and basketball, women's basketball, without those names, and that's very important, of course, but there are other great names and people that have one been doing it before them and people doing it since. And you called out USC's Juju Watkins leading the Trojans to an NCAA women's tournament Final Four, really kind of being something. And I appreciate that call out on the women's side of the game.
Oh, yes. And, you know, UConn's got a star that's coming out, too. She just injured her knee, but she'll be fine, and she's going to come out, too. You know, there was a WNBA before Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese came into the league last year. And I won't say I find it kind of like irritating, but you kind of have to remind people that, you know, a lot of women have played WNBA basketball and became basketball stars, and they're international stars and won championships and won titles and had great, great, great careers. It didn't all just start last spring. So it would be great for, like I say, Juju to come into the league with a championship, and let's focus on her instead of the back and forth between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it when, if it's able to, if that kind of a rivalry draws more eyes to the game, but then as listeners, as watchers of the game, those of us who have girls who are playing the game, make sure we look around and see the names that came before and the names that are up and coming also with them.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, tremendous. Help turn the league around. But what really sustained the league, and that's a big word now, sustainability, yeah, was the fact who was waiting in the wings. Detroit, Isaiah Thomas. You know, Michael Jordan was just starting to scratch the surface trying to get there. You know, they set the stage, but the play went on. And even before, you know, Magic and Michael, George Gervin and the teams that, you know, came over from the ABA, it was – it keeps moving forward, and that's what the WNBA needs now, not to stall on the stars that they have right now, but to keep moving forward. And that's what this next couple of 2-3 players coming out of college can do for the WNBA, and it really needs it. Because, look, if you don't follow it up, all this interest in the WNBA will go away in two seasons, and that's the last thing that they need.
And, you know, this is not the only, this last but not least is the one I have time to cover. I highly recommend, if you like this interview, listeners, go to the St. Louis American, find the article, 25 Sports Things I'd Like to See in 2025 from Alvin Reed. But, Alvin, you called one more thing out towards the end, and it's yourself to go at the Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Cooperstown, New York on July 27th to witness respective enshrinements of Dave Parker and the late Dick Allen.
Oh, yeah. As a kid, saw him play. Really, as an adult, they were still playing. But I'll tell you what. Dick Allen is my favorite player of all time. And when he came to the Cardinals, he was only here 1 year in 1970. But I got to see him play. And for a long time, I think until Jack Clark came along, Dick Allen was still the only guy that hit 30 home runs for the Cardinals. And, look, he went through a lot in his baseball career. And he was only here 1 year before he was traded. But, hey, Dick Allen deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm glad he finally made it. And let me tell you what, Dave Parker, that arm in right field and the throws he made and the bat he carried, he was part of the lumber company with the Pirates, always made it down there to Busch Stadium, the old one, to see the Pirates play. He was a fantastic baseball player. I am so glad I got to see them both play, and I am so glad that they're in the Hall of Fame, and I'm going to make that trip. I'm going to make it happen.
That's awesome, Alvin. Have a great trip, and thanks for joining us on KMOX.
Thanks. Anytime you need me, just give me a call, okay?
You got it. That was Alvin Reed of the St. Louis American. He wrote a great little article about 25 things he'd like to see in 2025. We should check up with him at the end of 2025 and see what all things did happen. More to come. We're going to shift to soccer, my jam here at KMOX, the sport I'm probably the most comfortable with. And it's been a while. I haven't talked to Dale Schilly. I've missed him. We'll catch up on all things happening in soccer and what St. Louis City SC is planning in this next season. Stay right here on KMOX. Hour number two rolls on for a Graybar Sports Open Line. Jen Cease in for Matt Pauly, and we shift gears now to soccer. St. Louis City SC is back in action. It feels like it has barely been any time off in the MLS, and it hasn't actually been if you're the final two teams. But, you know, winter is a quiet time for playing, maybe, and a busy time for moves in the back office. Joining us now, Dale Schilly, St. Louis City Academy Director and Game Analyst on Y98 for City's first team. Dale, it's been a bit.
It has been a bit, Jen. Everything good?
Good. Have you had any downtime? Because Academy runs on a little bit of a different kind of schedule than the first team or even City 2.
You know what? We've had an exciting month of December. We've got a little downtime now after Christmas and into January. But, yeah, we had three teams out in Palm Springs at a big event. And then we actually took the U4 teams down to Guadalajara to play in an event versus Chivas, Atlas, Toluca, and Necaxa. So we got to play some top Liga MX teams, and it was just a great experience.
You know, I know we got to get to the first team, but it just has me thinking of the Academy teams. They're young, and one, taking them on international travel, and two, at a young age, getting to experience different styles of play other than what you might find here typically in the U.S. youth system has got to be very groundbreaking for their skills, for the way they see the game.
More than the soccer piece was the cultural piece. We really wanted to hit. We were intentional with the age group. We were intentional with the location. So to bring 14-year-olds to Guadalajara, to have them experience the different way of life, obviously the soccer piece as well, was really impactful on the players. The feedback we got from the kids and the families was tremendous. It hit exactly what we wanted, which was to help ground the players and to appreciate what opportunities they have here by experiencing life and culture someplace else.
You know, somebody else who's on travel, Indiana Vasilev, 24 players called for the first U.S. men's national team January training camp under Maurizio Pochettino. And Indy, one of them, that's a pretty great recognition for not only Indy himself, he works so hard, but of course St. Louis City to have a player of theirs calls to the national team, especially under new coach Maurizio Pochettino.
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure for Indy, it's a great honor, and it's going to be interesting to see where they would play him, because we've seen him play everywhere but the nine and across the back.
Pretty much.
You know, yeah, we've seen him as a six, we've seen him as a 10, we've seen him as the wide tens, so he's really played in five different spots. And as you said, his work rate, his determination, his feistiness, his tenacity, his grit, are things that he can bring with him into camp and hopefully, you know, does a good job. I think this camp is one of discovery where Coach Pochettino is looking to find players outside of the upper tier and see who he can unearth to maybe move in, you know, alongside of the top group. So great opportunity for Indy.
And of course, we were supposed to actually have it today. I am appreciative of St. Louis City for moving it to Friday. I'm happy to wait to hear from for the weather and the drive-wise, but we'll be hearing on Friday at a press conference, and I'm sure KMOX will be able to play some of those sound bites as well as being able to see it through the social channels, talking, of course, and hearing from Diego Gigliani, Luz Fannenstiel, and of course, new head coach Olaf Melberg. I haven't met him yet, Dale. I'm assuming you probably have. I don't know how much he's been around, but exciting to get somebody in, and I know he's stateside. He's ready to go.
Yeah, he's stateside. He's ready to go. I think, you know, just a person that's had his experiences as a player, playing alongside of and captaining, you know, big personalities, being in a locker room of a EPL program and being a you know, important part of that locker room. There's just a lot of experience that he brings with himself, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together. But certainly, I think all of us obviously are looking forward to to seeing how the team shapes up into the new season.
Yeah, you know, and when it was first announced, I will admit I didn't know as much about him as I should have. You know, Aston Villa legend, previous Swedish national team captain. He's got, you know, not only playing experience, but managerial experience. And as I understand it, played at a center back position. And that is pretty much, you know, whether you're named a captain or not, that's a leadership position on the field. I'm just kind of interested in your thoughts as a coach, as a former player yourself. When a coach comes in and he's played a previous position, this one at center back, that's got to mean potentially a really great leader for a team who knows exactly, you know, how to watch the game from a sideline. You can watch the game on film, but he knows how that game's seen from the very back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that is a natural position to lead, organize, communicate, that sort of thing. So he certainly brings that with him. I'm interested in the locker room piece. So much of coaching at the professional level is man management and how you handle players in the locker room, away from the field. How do you motivate? How do you keep guys in line? How do you keep them pulling in the same direction? So he's had those experiences because of where he's been at the level that he's competed at, and the fact that he captained a World Cup team with Zlatan on it. So, you know, he's had
not bad.
He's had some experiences, and you know, I think that's the part that I'm really interested to see is how does he manage the players.
Yeah, one of his club and over in his country, is really known for their youth development. So development and making sure that leadership comes from top to down and runs all the way through the club seems like it might be a strength that he brings to City.
Yeah, you know, obviously that's from a selfish perspective.
Sure.
Is what opportunities will there be for younger players from Coach Olaf? And, you know, how will he create those opportunities and in terms of roster sizes? You know, how does he organize and structure a roster? And based on what he sees coming up the ladder through the academy and the two-team system. He's been on both sides of it. He's been on the pro side. He's been on the academy side. He knows, you know, sort of the hurdles and the speed bumps that come with a player trying to make it through his youth from a youth through the academy into the first team. I would think that he's going to be a player's coach and help create those opportunities.
And last but not least, I was fortunate to attend the MAC's Herman Trophy Awards on Friday night. And of course, Lutz Pfannenstiel, sporting director for St. Louis City SC, always seems to like to pop surprises. And one of the surprises he popped to the media there was the signing. Emil Jaskalainen didn't win the Herman Trophy, but I would see a pretty good second thing would to be picked in the MLS Super Draft by City.
Yeah. And you know, 24, 25 goals.
Yeah.
It's good size, you know, a nine. I think there's a lot of flexibility and opportunity you have by bringing in a player of that structure and that profile. You know, when you're looking at Klaus, you're looking at Simon Becher, as two nines, you're looking at Caden Glover, you're looking at Brendan McSorley as guys that have been successful at the two-team level, it gets fairly crowded. So it'll be interesting to see, where Lutz, what he does with Jaskalainen. You know, does he bump somebody down a notch? Does he move him someplace to on loan to see him develop over a year or so? I mean, there's a lot of possibilities with a player of that ability. And, you know, look, you always have room for a guy that can score 25 goals.
Yeah, I'll make a place on my roster for that. Well, Dale, thanks for joining me. I look forward to hearing from, all the brass at St. Louis City's press conference on Friday. And it's hard to believe the next season's almost here.
I can't wait. And I'll be looking for you and Joey sometime in February.
You got it. Thanks, Dale. That was Dale Shilley, St. Louis City Academy Director. You can also hear him on Y98 with myself and Joey Zanaboni as he provides the game analysis, and we cover St. Louis City first team games. More to come. We mentioned a little bit about the Herman Trophy Awards and how that was at the MAC downtown just this past Friday, and who, of course, was the MC? Well, Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott. He'll be up next, coming up on KMOX. Just about 30 minutes to go on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Jen C's filling in for Matt Pauly. We shifted gears this hour after talking a little bit about some of the other sports around St. Louis and the featured players in their various collegiate or pro careers. We shifted to soccer. We just got done talking with Dale Shilley because St. Louis City is getting ready to be back in action. But soccer never stops. It's a sport that I think truly never sleeps. And whether you're playing or you're honoring, just this past Friday at the MAC downtown, we, of course, had the Herman Trophy Awards. It's a great event. I've been to it before. Haven't been to it for a few years and was able to go this past year and bring my daughter, which was really exciting for her to kind of see that as she's a 16-year-old looking to see what might happen in her career and get to talk to some of those players who were honored. Somebody else who was there is somebody that I consider, you know, he's called Mr. Soccer, but I also call him the great connector in the beautiful game because there isn't a player, truly, men or women, that I talk to for City, whether I'm interviewing a former player or I'm talking to somebody who, Brian McBride, or I'm talking to, of course, a current coach like Steve Ralston, that if I bring up the name Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott, they have a story and they appreciate being connected. Thanks for joining me, Bill.
Hi, Jen. How are you? Thank you for those very kind remarks. And believe me, whenever I'm doing anything pertaining to the sport of soccer, somehow, some way, either, well, let's see, you brought it up, Brian McBride, Steve Ralston, any of those players that I had the great fortune to not only watch play, but to do their games internationally and MLS, I'm always going to mention those prime candidates for great players who have come from St. Louis. I will not hesitate.
Absolutely. And it always gives me a great talking piece, too, because sometimes I'll have them actually on a Zoom where we're recording and I get to see their face. And when I mention, you'll maybe give me a comment about the way they played or their style, they always have this nice, pleased look of surprise that your name is being brought up and that was said. And it's just nice to see their reaction to that for me.
Well, and to see players like that, Jen, and to be able to see them later in their careers and then later in life to see what they've done. But at the basis of all of it is that somehow and in some way they brought some prestige, some more pedigree to the city of St. Louis just by being soccer players who participated in games here, who necessarily all of them were not from, born or raised in St. Louis, but a player like Brian McBride, I consider him an absolute adopted St. Louisan for what he did at St. Louis University, then the inaugural draft pick and the first MLS draft in 1996 and what he's gone on to do. And then he, likewise, always mentions his fondness for the city of St. Louis.
You know, speaking of pedigree, this actually happened towards the end of the MAC Herman Trophy Awards, but I'm going to mention it at the beginning. You, Mr. Soccer, were honored with an MAC Lifetime Membership. That was really awesome to see. I had kind of heard through the grapevine that something might be coming, but I didn't know exactly what it was. Were you surprised? Did you know?
And you didn't tell me? You heard this?
I didn't tell you. I hid in the back.
Was I surprised? Positively. You know, it's fairly difficult to catch me without a comment or being able to make a comment. But yeah, very much so. It's been a great fortune of mine to be involved with the MAC Herman Trophy for absolute years. And getting back to what we just talked about a moment ago, getting able to see these young players, some of whom, not all, but go on to play professionally, and even better yet, go on to play on the United States full women's and full men's national team. And then you get a feel for what this event has done for the overall prestige, for the sport of soccer, but in particular, intercollegiate soccer. College soccer is not going to go anywhere, Jen. You mentioned you haven't had a chance to go to a lot of them lately, but I hope that you got a feel what these coaches say about college soccer, in that it's going to always be there. There are many avenues for players now, men and women, to try to get to that proverbial next level. Maybe college soccer is right for some of them. Maybe it's not. Maybe USL, MLS Pro 2. But college soccer is always going to be there as a potential avenue. And that's why this is such a big event. It does honor for that exact game.
You know, one of my favorite, I like the whole thing, of course, but I really, besides the fact that the food was fantastic,
but
I didn't eat anything that day because I stuffed myself with dinner, but I really enjoyed your intro. I enjoyed watching, of course, you know, they put up the videos on the screen, but the way that it was narrated, Bill, and not only, you know, my personal thing with coverage of women's sports, but that, you know, you're covering a lot and talking about the women's side of the game and the men's side of the game and kind of weaving those things maybe it was about 10 minutes. It was such a great intro. And I really appreciate the way you weave the story of not only St. Louis soccer, but of course, soccer around the nation through college sports.
Yeah, we try to do that every year, Jen. Jim Wilson, Director of Communications for the MAC, and his assistant Monica, his video assistant Monica Ryan to be exact, they came up with the concept of, hey, this year when we do the year in review, let's do some video along with it. Would you do the voiceover for them? Be my pleasure. Be glad to. Now, what they have to do is the difficult part, and that is go through countless YouTube images to get all this video, this bizarre. And every year, Jen, I'd like in the year in review, I'd like people to either watch a game that's been in the World Cup, European Cup, Women's World Cup, wherever. But I wanted to go way back because Gigi Riva had passed away this year, Italy's all-time leading scorer, and one of the greatest games ever played was the 1970 semifinal between West Germany at the time and Italy and West Germany. They're tied at the end of regulation, and that only happens because Karl-Heinz Schnellinger gets a tying goal into stoppage time in their regular 90. And then the final score is 4-3, but 5 of the 7 goals were scored in extra time. Now, it wasn't the most artistic game, but for the longevity of people watching these games over the years, it's way, way at the top of the list. Now, Italy goes on to play in the final. They lose to Brazil in what is still considered to be the best national team ever assembled in Brazil. But I just like to bring people's memories back to how we got here. And then you talk about a player like Aitana Bonmatí. Have you watched much of her, Jen, playing for Spain and Barcelona?
I have not enough, but what I see is beautiful.
Oh, she's magnificent. And then the fact that the NWSL is playing in Kansas City where the Current plays.
That was awesome.
Ever professional sports stadium built exclusively for a woman's professional sport. You have to know and you have to get a feel for the fact that now the sport is really making some inroads when there are soccer specific stadiums being built for the women's game, because that has done so much. I think that is one of, if not the biggest hot topics, if you will, that has grown the sport of men's professional soccer, in particular MLS, simply because, well, Jim, we've talked about it so many times. When the league started in 96, the league wanted to show that they were in big cities. Consequently, we're doing games in Pasadena, at the Rose Bowl, in East Rutherford, at Giant Stadium, at Mile High Stadium, at Arrowhead Stadium, all of which are fabulous venues. But if you get a crowd of 20, 21, 25,000, which is very respectable for soccer in the United States, you can't do that at the Rose Bowl. You lose any type of intimacy you're trying to create. So that's why one of the most important dates in the history of the sport in our country is May 15th
1999, when Columbus Crew Stadium opened. Now, was it the best venue? Not by any means, and the people in Columbus will tell you that. However, there had to be a first. And isn't it appropriate that Lamar Hunt would be on the end of that endeavor after what he did for the NPSL, then NASL, in 67 and 68. So the soccer-specific stadium for men and now for women is an immense part of the growth of the sport in our country.
And not only did I have a great time Friday night, but so did the Herman Trophy finalists. Always love seeing them get their acknowledgement for one, making it to the finalist round. Of course, only yes. one of them on the men's side and on the women's side gets the, that crystal ball, so to speak, mm-hmm. statue. But I will say, and I mentioned it to Dale Shilley in the previous episode, previous segment, that although Emil Jaskalainen did not walk away with the trophy, he sure did walk away with a super draft pick, and we'll be seeing him at St. Louis City.
Oh, positively, Jen. And you're going to see this guy in college soccer. Now, he was a number nine, and boy, did he have the right number on his back. But as opposed to the old-fashioned number nines, where they would just stand in the penalty area and wait for crosses, not Jaskalainen. He was everywhere. He would go. As a matter of fact, you heard him. He told me sometimes he would go back as deep as the center circle just to go find the game and get involved. But he was comfortable running at people, shooting for distance, working one-twos at the tip of the penalty area arc. And, of course, his prowess in the air. Well, just take a look at him. 6'3", 6'4", agile, very good on the ball. And he scored 23 goals. 23 goals in a college soccer season? Are you kidding me? That's preposterous. That's very difficult to do. And especially with a team like Akron, where he played, that plays an extremely difficult schedule. Now, at one time, he was on the books of Blackpool, Jen, and he was entertaining at least, staying in England, or wanted to stay in England to play professionally. But he is definitely going to give this a go. And consequently, for St. Louis City, he was the number 7 overall pick. Now, what remains to be seen is what Dale was just talking about. You're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people who are legitimately vying for that number 9 slot. And I think one player that in particular last year, when he came to this team late in the middle of the year, Simon Betcher, did so much to build his place as a possible first 11 player simply because of one of the things I just mentioned about Jaskalainen. He does not just stand in the penalty area and wait for balls to be played to him. He's a nonstop worker. He's going to do everything. But now there's going to be quite a few different avenues to look at. And when Olaf Meldberg takes a look at all these players, he's going to be very interested in seeing the overall abilities and the different abilities of these players, especially in and around the penalty area.
Yeah, that on the men's side. And then, of course, on the women's side, Kate Fossey ends up being the winner. She was somebody my daughter wanted to meet. So we made a beeline to meet her really quick. And just what not only a great, obviously soccer stud she is in her performance, but, what great character. And that's a lot you can tell about a player, too, is their character off the pitch. And it was just great to have, personally for me to have, my high school daughter be able to talk to somebody who's just won a very prestigious award in women's soccer and, is still considering her options because there are options.
Yeah, positively, Jen. And what you brought up about Kate Fossey is 100% accurate. This is a type of person that you want to speak for your sport. Number one, because of her abilities, which are tremendous. And that's why she's the best player in the nation. But in particular, how does she interact with people off the field? I continue, and I always bring up the concept of David Beckham coming to the United States. Now, we know why David Beckham came to the United States, to sell the sport, to make it a front page news, not just baseball, football, basketball, and hockey now, but soccer in particular, because people like David Beckham have been here. And then also Lothar Matthäus, Thierry Henry, and then, of course, most recently, Lionel Messi. But overall, they're all trying to get exposure for a sport. And how do they do that? Just by being present and interacting in the community. She won, Kate Fossey wins this year, the MAC Herman, and University of North Carolina, Jen, wins their 23rd national championship. what? That's impossible.
And after a total rebuild, right? After a total rebuild of the roster.
Word. No one, you heard her say it Friday night, no one expected us, the University of North Carolina, to be this far in the competition, to get to the final, to win the championship. And then in the process, she's the 20th player in University of North Carolina history to be a finalist for the MAC Herman Trophy. So I think her ability as a player, but in particular as a player off the field and interacting. Bobby Charlton said, a good player becomes great. An average player becomes good, excuse me. A good player becomes great by imitation of role models and patterning yourself after role models in small neighborhood settings, what they do on the field and off. And she is the perfect definition of that.
Yeah, another link to the University of North Carolina besides Kate Fosse playing, Anson Dorrance. I mean, I, when it comes to, if I picked a dinner to come to for the right key speaker, this would have been one that I would have fought for tickets for. Thankfully, I didn't have to fight for him. I got to meet Anson, talk a little bit with him, and just it was great. You two only had like 10 or 15 minutes, but you could have gone on for an hour. It was awesome.
Jen, could have easily gone on, but we do have some time restrictions. But nonetheless, man, you could, as I said it to him just jokingly on Friday night, you could tell he's retired now. I mean, he was always he shot pretty fast and loose, but he's really even getting vindictive at times.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to have a little jab out there.
not at all, and he's just getting ready for a torn ACL or a torn Achilles, playing this pickleball on a regular basis.
Listeners that don't
surgeon's dream.
Yeah, and for any listeners that don't know the name, there's legends in every single game and on every side of the game, men's and women's. And in women's soccer, it's Anson Dorrance, and he's touched all players from Michelle Akers all the way to current players. And alongside, I think at his table was also Carla Overbeck.
Exactly. So many people have told me, in particular, number 11, my all-time favorite midfielder from Stanford, Julie Foudy. Very simple. We don't win World Cups unless Carla Overbeck's at center back. Yeah. She was an absolute rock. And as I mentioned on Friday night, if you Google, how do I play the number 4 position properly? What should I do? There's a picture of Carla Overbeck.
There you go.
She was solid in the backfield, gave quality balls out of the backfield, was calm, composed, got involved in everything defensively, urged her teammates on when things weren't going properly. Nobody got worried, in particular her. She was captain of the national team for a while. And now, like we said a few moments ago, she's passing that along to all the young players who are playing for Duke University and getting a chance to see a woman like this who is at the cornerstone, the foundation of the popularity of the women's game in the United States, now giving back. Monsignor Meyer used to always tell us, Jen, the soccer priest from the CYC, look, boys, please, when you finish, make sure to please give something back. And she is doing that on all facets of the game.
That's right. Bill, thanks so much for your time. And also,
sure,
congratulations on your MAC Lifetime membership. Look forward to running to you on a pitch soon.
Yes, ma'am. Talk to you soon, Jen. Thank you.
That was Mr. Soccer Bill McDermott bringing us all up to date on the MAC awards and more. We'll wrap it up on the other side of the break. Stay here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Not tonight. Matt Pauley is out, not feeling well. Jen Sees. I've been alongside Kyle Sixta. Thank you, Kyle, for all your help on the controls, running things for the Sports Open Line, filling in for Matt. Hopefully he is better soon because there's more shows to come this week, of course. There is a short show tomorrow before, is it Billikens? Billikens. And then Thursday's Cardinal Countdown, and then another Sports Open Line. So Matt has plenty plenty to come back to. Hope he comes back soon. Busy show. Thanks to all of our guests for coming on. If you missed any part of this show, you can always find it free on the Odyssey app under the podcast section. You can find Sports Open Line. You can Sports on a Sunday Morning. If you've missed a show, you can go back there and find a particular segment or the entire thing. Kyle's always after the show, cutting that up and making sure it's available on KMOX. All things Cardinal baseball coming up next. The Gas House Gang episode recorded earlier today is up after the news right here on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.